Hello, welcome to a new episode of Rants with Danny Shi. Today is July 29th here in Taiwan, and we have another great show for you. Today we have another special guest. I say that every week, but we do have an incredible guest today. He pitched for the Uni Lions in 2016 and 2017, and he also pitched for the Fubon Guardians in 2018. That's after pitching in the minor leagues for years. He came to Taiwan to pitch in the CPBL for 3 years. Now he's a coach for the Gulf Coast Phillies, which is a rookie league team for the Philadelphia Phillies. This man is Bruce Billings. Hi, Bruce.
Hey, Daniel. How you doing?
I'm good. Did I miss anything in the introduction?
No. It's good. It's good.
Gulf Coast Phillies?
In Spanish. Yep, Gulf Coast Phillies, GCL West.
How's the I know that the minor league baseball, quote-unquote, canceled their season, but are you guys still playing any games with teams around you guys?
No, unfortunately, everyone is back home. All the minor league players are home. You know that the season's canceled.
Right.
And everyone's training on their own. So we're doing our best to keep the guys working and training and throwing and it could be difficult especially with different sets of rules in different states, and
right.
You know, some guys are in different parts of the world. There's guys all over the world, you know, that are playing in the Phillies organization. So it's a very fluid,
right,
dynamic situation that we're in.
Right. And it's a shame, I think, that minor league baseball has to suck this season. But here in Taiwan, the CPBL is playing, and you pitched here for 3 years. First of all, how much of the 2020 season have you seen? What impressions do you have on this season so far?
Well, I've tried to keep up. I saw that the brothers clinched the first half, and I try to watch as many highlights as I can. And I have quite a few friends that are still playing in the CPBL, so I always like to see them performing well. And I see highlights on social media. I saw a couple of your recaps. They're well done. And
thank you.
Yeah, I've been enjoying watching the games there. I'm glad that Taiwan has things pretty well under control, and it's always nice to see baseball and fans in the stands. So it's been good. It's been good to try and keep up.
I think one of the greatest things about CPBL, at least right now, is just the fan atmosphere and the dancing and the music. Let's get to that a little bit later. You faced the Brothers and the Monkeys. You pitched again from 2016 and 2018. Two of those years, the Monkeys won not only the championship at the end, but between 2017 and 2018, the Monkeys won all four half season championships.
Mm-hmm.
So what made them so good? What's so great about the Monkeys when you faced them? When the team is about to face the Monkeys, what's the one thing that the team, that your team always says, oh my God, they're so good?
The Monkeys hitters are very good. They're very disciplined. They make adjustments. So, you know, you can't just pitch them the same way every game. You have to constantly be able to adjust your game plan to how they're attacking you. They're just not going into the box and chasing certain pitches every time. Like, they learn. And that was one of the things that I found more difficult in facing the Monkeys lineups was that their adjustability at the plate. And, you know, they're just really tough to get out. They battle in the batter's box. They put the ball in play. They run hard down the line. They apply a lot of pressure. And it didn't hurt that they had a Wang Po in their lineup for a couple of years.
Yeah. And besides the Monkeys, the Brothers, I mean, the fans here, they laugh at the brothers for getting second place for, you know, every single year for the last 10 years or the last seven, 8 years. Obviously you faced them as well. Well, I mean, you have to be consistently good to make the Taiwan series almost every single year. Why are they so good? And what do you think is, in your opinion, facing them, what do you think is your last puzzle piece to get that championship?
No, it's just the pitching and defense going into the Taiwan series. It seems like really puts the final piece together. Everybody knows that the CPBL is a hitters league these days, and it seems like the championship team, like the Monkeys, they've had those couple pitchers at the back end of the pen, and they've had some very good starting pitching. So start the game on a good foot and get deep into a game, and then they have a couple guys to close the game out. And I think the Elephants, they have some pieces in the bullpen now, and they have some good starting pitching. Plus, they already have that really good offense. I think they have a very good chance of taking down the Monkeys this year, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah,
because you never know the second half. You never know who could get into the finals.
Right. And you know, the Monkeys, after starting with an incredibly hot start, you know, right now they have they started out the second half with the 1-3 record. It looks like it's anybody's game. The Lions and the Guardians. I mean, we're only a series in, but they're the guys who won this the first weekend series in the second half. So if you look at the Lions and the Guardians, obviously you played for both teams. Mm-hmm. You know, you're kind of in the middle, I think, for the Lions, in the Lions transition between the older core back, you know, from the early parts of this decade to this new core with a lot of young players. You also play with the Guardians as well. You know, for the last 3 or 4 years, they're kind of looking up in a way to the Taiwan series. Obviously, the Lions played in the series in 2018 as well. But so what do you think for them? You know, what steps do they need to take to get to that same plateau as maybe the Monkeys were in the last couple of years?
Well, like you said already, there's a young core of players on both of those teams now. The Guardians, not as much, but especially the Lions. And when it comes down to playing in those playoff games, where that experience that, you know, being able to control your heartbeat and really focus in on a situation and have that confidence, like, I've been here before, I know I can do this. That is a key little ingredient. And if they don't have that, they need to find a way to get past that once they get to the final. So that's another thing. They have to get there, you know. I think the Guardians have the pitching. I think the Guardians have good defense. It's the timely hitting that they need. The Lions, again, the Lions are just young. Playing clean baseball is big for them. Playing, you know, having solid pitching, having good defense, because we all know they can hit. So there's some things there. They have the skill. All the teams in the CPBL have the skill to win any game, but it's the ones that consistently put on that effort and win, you know, week in, week out. And we've seen that from the Monkeys. The Elephants have done it for years, obviously. And the Lions and the Guardians are just missing that consistency.
I think you're spot on. The Guardians, the Lions, you know, I think they just need a couple more years, especially the Lions. I think the young core has been shaping up, especially between Lian Ke and the three musketeers in the outfield, as they like to call it. Let's shift to your CPBL career. First of all, how were you introduced to the CPBL over in the States? And obviously you were probably asking around to other players about, you know, what they think of the league and stuff like that. So, before you came here, what was your impression of the league?
Well, I heard before I came there that it was a pitcher's league, that there was a lot of defense and a lot of pitching,
that
and the ball
doesn't
fly. Yeah, then I showed up, and it was a little bit different situation. But I played many years in hitters leagues.
Right.
In college, I played in the Mountain West Conference, which they share a lot of stadiums with the Pacific Coast League and AAA. And the ball just flies. So you have to learn.
Yeah.
You have to learn how to make good pitches. And if you don't, sometimes you have to pay the price a little more often than maybe in other places. But I asked around, and I heard it was a pitcher's league. I heard that the fans are very passionate, and I heard about the tradition in Taiwan and the culture, and I heard to be open to it and to enjoy the food out there. And I heard it was very hot, so be prepared to sweat. And I think if you don't experience Taiwan for yourself, it's hard to truly explain how hot it is on the field. It was the first time where guys were changing their entire uniform midway through the game because they'd just be completely drenched in sweat, where you're just like, I'd be pitching in my hat. There'd be sweat just coming off my hat like it was raining, but it's not raining. It's you're just sweating so much. So learning how to stay especially hydrated.
Yeah.
I found some very good tea shops in Taiwan. And,
right.
So, you know, those are, I actually miss going to the tea shops, just walking down the street and getting some tea. So we have a couple, but they're not the same. The fruit is just a little different in Taiwan. Very, very fresh.
Right. But what's your favorite fruits in Taiwan?
My favorite fruit in Taiwan?
Yeah.
Oh, I think I really liked the guava.
Guava?
I forget what it was called. I think it was, dang it, what's it called in Taiwan? It's called baila, right?
Yeah, yeah, baila.
Yeah,
yeah.
Baila, yeah.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed that. And in every team, we had that. Like before the games, we'd have baila. So I really enjoyed that. And of course, I really love the lemon and lime tea drinks with the green and black tea, a little bit of light sugar, you know.
Yes.
Enjoy a milk tea. Oh, geez. I'm thirsty right now. I'm in the middle of the desert in Utah, and I'm making myself more thirsty than I already am.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously you talked about some of your experience here, but when you first, you know, landed in Taiwan, and after probably your first few practices or first few games that you played, what was your impression of Taiwan?
I remember when I first showed up, it was very, like, especially in southern Taiwan, it was very foggy, and it was just the time of the year that the sun wasn't coming out. It was a lot of clouds and the sun wasn't coming out, so I thought it was very interesting for that little portion, just for like not seeing the sky. But then obviously, you know, the seasons change.
Yeah.
And then on the baseball field, I remember pitching inside. I remember pitching inside, and that was more uncommon. So I tried to take advantage of that as much as possible. And then the league adjusted to me, so that I had to, you know, now we have to adjust back. But I remember just thinking about that specific thing. Like, I had to use my fastball inside, and for the hitters to think about that and really focus that I will keep going there unless they adjust. And then once they did, now we started playing the game back and forth, up and down, and that was fun. That was that made me think about pitching a lot differently. You know, I pitch inside in the States, but in Taiwan, I was really forced to think differently about hitters and how to attack them. And that's what really stuck out to me right away.
Right. And you also mentioned about the heat in the summer. And that's the one thing I think a lot of the overseas players to come here and to something that they have to adjust. Even mm-hmm. for players that they're, I mean, you're born in San Diego, which out of all, most cities in the States is probably one of the hotter cities. And you even mentioned you have to adjust. You were in Taiwan for 3 years, but, you know, by year two and year three, how did you, you know, talk to the new pitchers that just came in about how to adjust? How did you adjust? What advice did you get? And also, what advice would you give to new pitchers? I guess I asked that already.
Yeah, the first thing I always tell them is to be open to the culture. Be open, because it's just different. It's a different culture. It's you know, the way the clubhouse is run. The way, I mean, we talk about the weather there, but if you're mentally prepared for the humidity and the heat and understand how to attack it by being hydrated, by using long sleeves to soak up that sweat running down your arm, to making sure that your nails are cut a certain length so that you don't get blisters, so that, you know, you're using the rosin on the mound more consistently to help you to stay dry or manage that moisture on your hands so that you can feel the ball better and control the ball better. And so that I would tell them that, and I would talk about the umpires. I would let them know, like, you know, don't disrespect the umpires, because they're not going to help you. Sometimes you're going to make a pitch and you're not going to get that call. That's universal. That happens right. All over the world. And just, okay, understand that you made a good pitch and make another good pitch. And that goes a long way with not showing up the umpires, not showing up the team. You know, smile on the field and have fun, because that culture, the fans, they just love watching baseball out there. I never felt like another, maybe because I didn't understand, you know, Mandarin, but yeah. I never felt like another fan wished ill will on me. I always felt like other fans were just happy to see the players perform well and play the game. And yeah, that was there's more, but that would be like the foundation of the right. things I would tell a foreign player when they're coming in.
You know, you talked about the rosin bag, obviously, on the mound. When I watched the CPBO, obviously I watched quite a bit of MLB baseball. In the MLB, correct me if I'm wrong, when you use the rosin bag, you have to touch a part of your jersey before you pitch again, right? Even if you use a rosin bag.
I'm not sure about the rosin bag. I know you have to touch your clothing if you lick your fingers to add moisture.
Right.
But the rosin bag, maybe I'll look that one up. Maybe I should know that rule.
I probably need to double check on that. I've seen a lot more pitchers in Taiwan that you know, has, you know, it's just kind of powdered up their throwing hand with the rosin bag. Is that because of the humidity in Taiwan? Because that doesn't happen too much in the MLB.
Yeah, the most of the stadiums in the MLB are along the coasts, where it isn't as humid. It'll be hot, but it'll be drier heat. Yeah. So you'll see more guys adding moisture to their fingers to help them with tack on their fingers to hold the ball better.
Right.
I'm trying to think of a humid place in the MLB. Maybe Atlanta is humid.
Right.
You'll see this guy sweating more there.
Another
humid place.
And most, the newer MLB stadiums, they're putting roofs too.
Yeah.
So even if they're in a humid place, you know, they just put the, you know, close the roof and they put AC in there. So it's probably a lot drier than outside.
Oh, yeah. It feels like 75 degrees and feels amazing.
Yeah. Right. And you know, who's the toughest hitter you had to face in the CPBL, or you know, when you remember when you're on the mound and that hitter comes up and you're like, oh no, oh no, it's this guy again.
Oh geez. Well, Wing Po was always a tough at bat. Yeah. He stands out the most to me personally. But there's every team, there was a couple hitters I had to really focus on and go, if I make a mistake to this guy, he could put a run on the board. You know, like,
yeah.
It's like the Elephants lineups when I was playing. I mean, the 3 years, the Elephants lineups are always very good.
Right.
The Monkeys lineups, always very good. The Guardians, when they were the Rhinos, there was days when sometimes it seemed maybe a little easier to pitch to those lineups. And then there was a couple of days where it was like, I couldn't get anybody out in these lineups.
Yeah.
So that's going back to consistency. When I played for the Guardians and I was pitching against the Lions and I had all my friends on that team, they knew how I like to pitch. And right. They were very comfortable in the box. And it's frustrating because, you know, these are my friends. Like, I battled yeah. with these guys, and now I'm trying to get them out, you know, so that I can survive, so I can pay the bills when I go home. Because, you know how it is for foreigners in the CPL.
Right.
If you don't perform, you're going home. So
right.
that was frustrating to have to face those guys because they're very good hitters. And, you know, I had a lot of respect for what they could do in the batter's box.
Yeah, yeah. And, yeah, I mean, you said it. It's more of a hitter's league, especially in the last couple of years in the CPBL. So it is a little bit harder to survive as a pitcher, I guess, right? To when you have such great hitters coming up to the plate. So when you go back to the States, people probably are asking you about the CPBL, or you're talking about your stories here in Taiwan with your family and friends. How do you introduce the CPBL to them now? And, how do you talk about Taiwan and CPBL with their family and your friends?
I always mention how exciting the games are and how the game is never over in the CPBL. Yeah. You can be up by 7 runs in the 9th inning, and the other teams can score 8 runs. Like, you never know, and that makes it exciting. It also makes it very heart wrenching.
Right.
So I remember there would be some games where I pitched and then I'd be done. And I'd be in the clubhouse, I'd be doing arm exercises, and I'd be watching the game on the TV. And you're just like holding your breath sometimes in the situations, or like there's guys are going to score, we're up by 1 run, and there's nobody out. And sometimes, you know, we make a remarkable play, we get out of the game and we win, and then sometimes we don't. And it's just very edge of your seat action in the CPBL.
Yeah. Yeah. And it for fans, I think, just very exciting baseball. But you know, you talk about the fans, and I went to a game finally as a fan yesterday. I wasn't foreign to the dancing and the music, but again, like just sitting there as a fan finally for the first time this year, for the first time in a long time, it just felt like a party scene, especially going back. I think a couple of weeks ago, I went back to the 2019 NLDS game 5. I mean, it was a game 5, so it was an elimination game. I watched the highlights, and I couldn't be more bored at the game. I was like, where's all the dancing? Where's all the music? I'm wondering, though, like, as a pitcher, like, when you're on the mound, how does the music affect you? You know, how much does that really affect things on the field? I know there's some players that you know, that just goes, you know, it's all on the game. Those are getting tuned out and stuff like that. But
yeah.
how did you pitch with the music and the dancing and all that?
You have to get used to it. That was another thing that I would mention to the foreign players coming in that didn't know about that atmosphere. It feels like a playoff atmosphere if you're not used to it. It's The music's loud. People are chanting for their guy, and every pitch is something, you know. Yeah, oh, like you feel it on the field, and you have to control it. You have to control your heartbeat. You have to remember to breathe. You have to remember to focus on what are you trying to do with this pitch. You know, thinking about what did the player do in his last at bat. How did I get him out? What was he looking for? Okay, this at bat. How did he look on that swing? Staying focused in the present moment while feeling the energy from the fans. And it was good. It was good in that it helps you to perform at a higher level because there's that extra intensity. So I really liked it. And I always told people I really liked playing in front of those fans because that extra energy helps on some of those really, really hot days.
Yeah.
And then again, though, some of those days where it was tough to get anybody out, you felt it even more because, man, those crowds can get loud.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially on those clinching games. I was working at the stadium during the Monkees Brothers. It was a potential clinching game for the Brothers. It was a full crowd, probably the first full crowd in the CPBL this year, under the guidelines. And every single pitch. And also it was like about 50-50 Brothers and Monkees. So it felt like the Texas-Oklahoma Cotton Bowl game. Like, you know, like one of those rivalry college football games where half a stadium is one team. And so, and every single pitch is just loud and incredible to witness. You probably get asked this quite a bit, and it's probably, you know, it's something that the fans and the media loves to talk about. How do you compare the CPBL to the minor league systems in the States? You know, like, there are people saying it's single A baseball. There are people that are saying it's triple A baseball. Obviously, it's different with different baseball cultures and stuff like that. Do you think it's comparable? And if you think it is kind of comparable, where do you think the CPBL lands?
No, I wouldn't compare it at all.
Right.
When people start comparing it to minor league levels, I always wonder where are they coming from. Where is their perspective? Because anybody who's played in the CPBL knows that you really can't compare it to anything. And anyone who's played in the States, who's played in both, like you just can't compare it. It's the CPBL, you're playing against veteran players who've played at the highest of the major league level. And then you're also playing against guys that are just out of like high school in Taiwan like a college. So the way the game plays, it's very fluid. It changes. So one at bat,
right?
I have to make seven pitches that are just high level pitches, and then the next at bat, I might make three mistakes to a hitter, and he might not touch any of them.
Right.
So to compare it to a level in the United States, I would ask their background, and then. If it's just like, oh, you know, I just watched the game, then it's like, oh, okay, then you don't really understand because you have to feel it. You have to understand. You have to feel it to understand. And if you don't feel it, then you really don't understand. So,
that's my
take. The CPBL is its own entity, and it's very competitive, and it's very different. I wouldn't compare it to any minor league level.
Yeah, and I think. One of the things that's so underrated is that gets ignored when you're comparing stuff like this is, you know, because there are only four teams, you face each other so much, you know, that kind of goes away, you know, because, you know, I mean, as a pitcher, you're kind of at a disadvantage facing the same hitter the fifth time in 2 weeks. So, I've been watching every single game since early May, and then, you know, it seems like every 2 weeks, you know, it's the same pitcher batter matchup, which I think it creates a new chemistry in terms of the competition. But you can't compare it to a 30-team league or a 15-team league where you're facing the same the same hitter once a month or once every 2 months.
Yes. Yep. And to speak on that, actually. That is a very good point. When you're facing the same hitters over and over again, you build a relationship with them.
Yeah.
They know how you pitch them. You know how they swung against you. And right. So sometimes you're playing into, sometimes you solely attack their weakness.
Yeah.
It's a different kind of chess match that you're playing. You know, right. Sometimes you're just going with your stuff, your best stuff. And other times you might have your best stuff and you have to really play that chess game.
Right.
So that's a good point. Where like in the United States, you might face in certain leagues, you might only face a hitter one time. You might face a hitter three times in one game, and then you won't face them again until the next year. And right. So like where they're not as comfortable seeing you and seeing your arm slot and seeing your pitch, you know, your pitches, where you can maybe get away with a couple mistakes more often. The CPBL, those hitters, they get so comfortable, they'll make you pay as the season progresses. So you have to stay on your A game, or in, like you've seen some of those games, they just get out of hand where it's, you know, the final score is 20 to 15 and it was 4 hours long. You know, it's so the game could get a little hard. That's why seeing guys like Mike Lurie and Brian Woodall, Mitch Lively, I have more friends that I would mention right now, but like those guys that have had so much success in the CPBL for such a long time.
Right.
It's a real testament to just how good they are as pitchers.
Right. Right. And it's incredible. If you look at the amount of the turnover rate of foreign pit players at the CPBL. And then you look at Mike Lurie, which is, you know, he's approaching what, his sixth year or fifth or sixth year in the CPBL and is still pitching at a high level. I think it's incredible. Let's move on to your the life out of the ballpark in Taiwan. I mean, you must have been to a lot of night markets with their teammates and stuff like that. So what's your go-to food at the night markets?
Oh, so see, this is a little different for me. I only went to a few night markets because it was so hot that usually I would try to just get back to my apartment or hotel room and get to the AC.
Right. That
but,
makes sense.
But when I did go to the night markets, I'd always look for a good tea. And I'd mix it up. Sometimes I'd get a black tea with sugar. Sometimes I get a milk tea. Sometimes I get like a fruit tea. You know, I'd mix it up. But I would get, I forget exactly the name, but it was just like a barbecued like pork chop with some noodles and an egg and some vegetables.
Okay.
Like that would be like one of my, either that or they have like this special like sandwich thing.
Right. Oh yeah. Like the bun with the sweet pork inside.
Yes. That. Sometimes I get that. So, right. And I'd stay away from the sticky tofu.
Oh, no, I was going to ask you. Yes, no, I mean, have you tried one? Have you tried this?
Okay.
Stinky? Yeah.
So my brother came to visit when I was, the first year I was with the Lions. And we were at the night market, and we were talking about the stinky tofu. My brother, he's a little more crazy than I am. He was like, you know what? Let's try it. You know, I really want to try it. So, let's try it. I was going to let him try it first.
Yeah.
So we get the order. He's holding the stinky tofu. He puts a piece in his mouth.
Yeah.
And he starts chewing it. And I'm just looking at his face. And all of a sudden, he closes his eyes. And then he just looks like he can't swallow it. And then it comes back up in his mouth. And he spits it back into the bag.
Oh, no.
So that response made me know that I think I'm going to just pass on the stinky tofu, and then I'll just trust that the people who like it, I'll just trust that they like it for a reason, and I'll go eat something else.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can already imagine your brother's face. When you're with the Lions and the Guardians, like you said, you probably had, build, you know, quite a relationship with their teammates with the Lions, you know, one being the first team that you played for in Taiwan. What's the what's the one thing, what's the food that the, from the coaches to the players, or just people in the clubhouse, that just goes, besides stinky tofu, that you know, just kind of goes like, you had to try this, and then you had it, and you're kind of like, you're thankful that they introduced that to you.
Sure, there was quite a few things. I really enjoyed the food. We had a lot of like boxed lunches with like fried chicken and like an egg and the rice. We had these seaweed wraps with pork in them and rice that were delicious. I really loved the fried chicken from Papa Ipa across the street from the stadium.
Yeah.
In Taiwan, in Tainan.
Yeah.
Have
you tried the beef soup in Tainan? Like I just visited Tainan, and it's probably my favorite food over there.
Yes. Yeah. Sometimes we'd go, when my wife and I would go to the movies. Once in a while, we'll stop and get beef soup. Yeah. Afterwards, on the way home in the taxi cab, and have that beef soup in our apartment. Yeah. And then when I was living in Taipei, I would walk from the stadium or to the stadium, and I'd pick up beef soup at this little corner shop that was very close to my apartment.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's a lot of good food out there.
Right. Obviously you didn't try stinky tofu, but you saw it. You saw it happen in person. But besides that, what's the most exotic food that you think you've had in Taiwan?
Oh, I had a shark fin soup. Like one of the first, like the first week I was there.
Yeah,
we had a banquet. We had a banquet with the lions.
Yeah,
and so I remember trying the shark fin soup, and it was, you know, almost like a sweet and sour texture, and then you barely can like get the texture of the shark fin because I was like shaved very fine, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I remember that. I remember that wasn't so bad. It was interesting. It was different.
Right. The fin itself doesn't really have a flavor. It's just the most of flavor come from the soup. So how is that different from the Asian, you know, quote unquote Asian food you had in the States before coming here?
I kept it very simple with the Asian food in the States. So the traditional, like the gung pao chicken.
Right, gung pao chicken, the like, food panda.
Yeah, like in the States, it's very, very simple, right?
Right.
And then I remember there was this one place that was close to my dorm in Tainan. And I remember they had kung pao chicken, and I ordered it, and they'll serve it with the bone in it, and they'll serve it with the sweet chili, like the sweet hot chilies. And the first time I was like, oh, it has the bone, but I really enjoyed the dish. I thought the flavors were very good.
Yeah.
And I ended up kind of experimenting a little bit with some, like, I would put the chicken on some rice, and then I put a little bit of sesame dressing. Some QP sesame dressing on it, and then I'd get some salted seaweed, and kind of make these like little tiny Taiwanese tacos, and I'd enjoy that like a little special meal.
Nice. It sounds pretty good.
It's good. I'd recommend it.
Yeah. when you go back though, when you go back to the States, what's the one food that you just miss a lot, and it's the one food that you can only have it here? And are you having more Asian food back in the States now that you've after playing in Taiwan?
Yeah, my wife and I probably once a week we'll make white rice, and we will put like, we'll make it like a green onion egg, and maybe get some type of like pepper steak or chicken. And we'd put it over the rice, and we'd get QP sauce, the Japanese sesame dressing. And we'd kind of have like our, that was like our traditional Taiwanese, like, I don't know, something to like kind of remember our time there
when as
a player. And we had a lot of good memories there. So we, maybe once a week we'll do that.
Yeah, that sounds.
And we still go, we have a Dai Yuan's in Phoenix. So we'll go there maybe once a month. We'll go to Dai Yuan's because it's a little more expensive here.
Right.
So we'll go and get a couple teas and take those home.
And so what's the food that you miss from Taiwan that like you're just kind of craving, you can't get it in the States, and you're just kind of like, oh, I wish I was in Taiwan having this.
My wife would say the dumplings. The way the dumplings were in Taiwan is different than what we could find. And then for me it was just walking around and getting those local little mom and pop shops and getting the food made fresh. It's you can't do that here. It's not the same. So and then there's so many different options of food, with pork, like pepper pork or steak or chicken, and the rice just is a little it's just a little different. It tastes a little different. So those we miss those.
Have you visited other countries in Asia other than Taiwan? What are your experiences there? What other countries do you plan on visiting if this pen when this pandemic goes away?
We've been my wife and I have been to Japan. We went to Okinawa, and it's beautiful. Have you been to Okinawa?
Not yet, not yet.
Not yet. We recommend it. They have a wonderful, wonderful little beach scene there, and they have a nice aquarium, and the Japanese cuisine is good. We enjoy it. And for as far as traveling right now, it's geez, we haven't thought about it. Maybe we'd go back to Taiwan. Maybe we'll go back to Japan. But that's one thing we'd have to talk about because the world is in a different place right now.
The one thing I always let the guests do before we finish the show or finish the interview is I want to call this thing called FaceTime, in which I just I give the guest as much time as they need to talk about anything that they want to talk about. So there are players or there are people who are talking about people ranting about trolls on Twitter, or they have a team like back then when sports was happening. There are people who are ranting about their sports teams and stuff like that. I have for players it's a little bit different, but that's the one thing I let the guests do every now and then, at the end of the show. So Bruce, it's your turn. You have the floor and you have it as long as you need.
Oh, okay. Well, an interesting situation came up on social media. There was just this person with many followers, like tens of thousands of followers, made a comment about how athletes don't care about people. And I took that to heart because I still consider myself an athlete. I lived a professional athlete life. I have many close friends that are still playing, that are professional athletes, that I know that just this isn't true.
Right.
But this person shares this with all their followers and is trying to push this agenda and separate people. And I see this on social media where people try to separate people. And it's called social media, but it's not social anymore. It's just, I'm going to say something and I'm going to see how many people agree with what I say. And if you don't agree with what I say, I'll try to convince you. And if I can't convince you, I'll just block you from my life.
Right.
And I'll just deal with the people that agree with me. But that's not how the world works. The world works with many different opinions and many different people. And like every one of my teammates that I've ever played with, we had one goal. We're trying to win. And we had to play together to win. And we had to find a way to work together to win. And I just see this tendency in society where people are separating from their neighbors and they're caring less for the person next to them and caring more about themselves.
Right.
And I think that the world needs more people to stop looking at themselves and to start thinking about the person next to them and what's best for the community and what's best for the greater good. And that's where we're at. I just see this tendency of social media isn't social. It's separating people. And I think that social media is actually going to probably be dying away in terms of people going to it, because just so many people are getting in trouble with their opinions. Mm-hmm. And so many people's lives that are supposed to be private are being made public. Yeah. And I just think the next generation, they're going to learn a lot of lessons from our generation, and they're going to actually turn off. They're going to get away from being in the spotlight constantly, and they're going to go back to having their private life and having their own thoughts and being content with that. But that, I mean, we'll see what happens.
Well said, Bruce. I think social media is creating bubbles around the world that doesn't mm-hmm. help, especially during a crisis like we have today. I'm managing the CPBL account. I see a lot of people going, you know, this could have been us. We should be having fans, but in the stands in the States. But I mean, obviously, it takes more than just, you know, a couple thousand people in the States to pull it through. And it seems like it's getting harder to do that, even though it should be, like, even in a pandemic, it should be a time for people to unify. But doesn't seem to be happening over there. Thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for the invitation.
Hopefully I can have you back on soon, talking more baseball in the future.
That would be fun.
Yeah. With that, thank you for joining us. As always, I have no idea what I'm talking about next week, but I should be back next week. I'll see y'all later.
All right, Daniel. You have a good one, man.
Have a good one.